Samuel Muhammad versus the City of Chicago.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Dennis Giovannini. I represent Samuel Muhammad, who is acting in this lawsuit individually and also as the administrator of the estate of his son, Samuel Mitchell. We are asking this court to review de novo the trial court's granting of a motion for summary judgment in favor of the defendants in this case, particularly in favor of defendant Bullard and the City of Chicago. The facts of this case are relatively straightforward. On March 2nd of 1999, a man entered the LaSalle Bank at a downtown branch committing an armed robbery at that bank. After that person left the bank, a description of that person, a rather detailed description of that person, was radioed via the police radio bands to various other officers on the street. Officers Bullard and Allen saw a person, appears to be approximately 15 minutes later and several blocks away, that fit the description of the robber that they had got over the radio. They then, being an unmarked squad car and in plain clothes, pulled over, confronted the man, and ordered him to halt to ask him some questions. At that time, it is uncontroverted, that person pulled a gun out, and according to Officers Bullard and Allen, as well as one civilian witness, pointed that gun in the direction of Officer Allen. At that time, Officer Bullard pulled his revolver, fired two shots, striking the person, and that person fell down on the ground. After that, there's the testimony of Officer Bullard to the effect that he went around where that person had fallen behind a car, injured, that person then pointed his gun at him, and Officer Bullard fired two additional shots, one of which turned out to be fatal, Samuel Mitchell. Unlike the cases that the defendant has cited in their brief, we have a rather unique situation here when it comes to a deadly force case. This is a situation, the only witness who has testified to the actions of Mr. Mitchell that would have justified the final fatal deadly force was Officer Bullard himself, the defendant's police officer. The other witnesses on the street either did not see the actions of Mr. Mitchell or were not in a position to see him and did not testify that anybody else had seen him raise his gun a second time. This court, in the case of Plackus versus Drinsky, which is one of the cases cited by the defense in their brief, made the following statement in this type of case. It says, the award of summary judgment to the defense in deadly force cases may be made only with particular care where the officer defendant is the only witness left alive to testify. In any self-defense case, a defendant knows that the only person likely to contradict him or her is beyond reach. So a court must undertake a fairly critical assessment of the forensic evidence, the officer's original reports or statements, and the opinions of experts to decide whether the officer's testimony could reasonably be rejected at trial. In this case, quite unfortunately, neither side in the trial court, neither my predecessor in this case nor anybody on the defense side, asked the trial court, to review any of the forensic evidence in this case. And by that I simply mean the number of times Mr. Mitchell was shot, where he was shot, the directions of those shots, things of that nature.
Was Mr. Mitchell on the ground when he fired back?
Mr. Mitchell never fired, Your Honor. He allegedly pointed a gun at Officer Bullard while on the ground, is my understanding of the testimony. Because the initial two shots that Officer Bullard fired, at least one, as it turns out, in fact, both shots had struck Mr. Mitchell, and he fell behind a car. There's no indication anywhere in the record that Mr. Mitchell ever got up after that.
Were those the first shots or the second shot?
First shots, Your Honor.
Well, then, was he on the ground at that time when the other shots were fired?
Yes, there's no indication to indicate to the contrary, Your Honor.
Pardon me?
There's no indication in the record to indicate that he ever got up after he fell down after the first shot.
And was he flat on his back or kneeling or what?
The record
don't
is,
you know?
I don't know, Judge. The record is silent on that point.
There's no question, there's no dispute with regard to the fact that he had a weapon.
No dispute about that at all, Judge. It is our position, based on the language in the Plakas case, that in a situation like this, where, number one, Officer Bullard is the only witness available to testify to the justification for the final fatal shot.
Did the family ask for an inquest in this matter?
No, I don't believe they did, Your Honor. There was obviously an autopsy performed. As I stated, though, Judge, unfortunately, neither party introduced the results of that autopsy into evidence in the trial.
There was a witness as to the initial shots fired.
Correct, Your Honor. There was.
And I assume because Mr. Mitchell fell behind the car, the witness, the non-officer witness, couldn't see it.
That is apparently what happened. He did not indicate anything other than seeing the first two shots being fired. It's our position, Your Honor, that in a situation like this, where, given the circumstances that, number one, we have a man that has obviously been somewhat incapacitated, maybe not entirely, by the first couple of shots, and the only person to attempt to justify the later two shots, one of which was the fatal shot, obviously, is the officer himself. But I think that the district court probably should have taken it upon itself to inquire a little bit into the forensics. Had they done that, I think the judge would have come to a different opinion in this case. That is not in the record as it stands today, but I think the Plakas case imposes that responsibility on the district court judge in a situation like this. That's the exact situation that Plakas refers to. I would point out the Plakas case went on to say in that particular case that in that case, that particular standard didn't apply because in that case, in the Plakas case, there were three or four witnesses to the event, entire event. Here we only have one witness, namely the defendant officer, who alleges the second raising of the gun after the person's been shot on two different times. The reason I point that out, much was made in the trial court of whether or not Mr. Mitchell was the person that robbed the bank, and I think while that's not a very controlling factor, I think it is a relevant factor only in the sense that if a jury were to decide that he were not the person, that might cast some more doubt, additional doubt on the officer's credibility, particularly Officer Volder's credibility dealing with this second shooting or second raising of the gun. I think had the forensics been examined, a jury could well have found or disbelieved whatever portion of Officer Volder's testimony it wanted to. If it wanted to believe the first part, that, yeah, the first two shots were justified, which apparently they were because there were other witnesses to those shots, that's one thing. But
where were the bullet holes in his body?
Your Honor, my understanding...
The first two shots.
We don't know where the first two are. I can tell you where the four were all together, Judge. One was in the buttocks. One was in the back shoulder. One, interestingly enough, was through his right wrist, and one was in the temple of his head. And I point out, interestingly, the right wrist because, if Your Honor recalls the officer's testimony, their testimony was, all three police officers that were on the scene, that after Mr. Mitchell was killed, he still had his gun in his right hand. And I think, in light of the shot through his wrist, that would cast some doubt on that credibility of that statement. In addition, Judge, the other two shots, aside from the obviously fatal shot to the head, the other two shots were from the rear. And I don't know how that squares with the officer's initial testimony that when he first fired two shots at Mr. Bullard, that he was aiming at his partner. I would think one of those shots, at least one of those shots, would have been somewhere either in the front or the side as opposed to the back. So I think that had that evidence been considered by the court, as I think it should have been under Plakas, that the court may have well come to a different conclusion on the motion for summary judgment. Obviously, at that point, I think it would be an issue that a jury should decide whether or not to believe Officer Voller's second part of his story dealing with the second raising of the gun. The court has no more questions. Thank you.
May it please the court. As I will explain this morning, this case rests on one proposition. There is no genuine issue of material fact whether Mr. Mitchell presented a significant threat of death or injury to the officers. particular, the record raises no genuine issue of material fact that would cause a trier of fact to reject Officer Vollen's version of events. It's undisputed that in response to a radio call regarding a bank robbery, the officers responded and went in search for the robber. It is undisputed that Mr. Mitchell closely resembles the description of the bank robber and that Mr. Mitchell was armed. The officers saw him, identified themselves as police officers, ordered him to stop, and he raised his weapon at them. Believing that Officer Allen's life was in danger, Officer Vollen fired his weapon at Mr. Mitchell. Again, the officers...
When the assailant raised his gun, where was it pointed?
It was pointed at Officer Allen.
Where? At what part of his body, if you know?
I don't believe the record indicates a particular part of the body, but he was directly in the line of fire.
Well, are you in the... Is it a danger to the officer if the gun is aimed at his ankle or his lower extremity?
Well, I think that would still present a significant threat of injury to the officer.
I didn't say that. I said that a significant threat of injury, yes. But I mean of actual fatal injury. Endangering his life is what I'm talking about. Isn't that the test?
The test is whether the officers reasonably believe that the suspect has posed a significant risk of death or bodily injury, or serious bodily injury, and I think that would occur no matter what direction the gun was pointed. In fact, if it was pointed in the air, there's no telling whether it would ricochet and go into a window and hit somebody in a building and cause injury.
Do you have any case law to back that theory up, that one pointed in the air would be a danger of significant injury from ricochet?
Well, I think any of the cases regarding the use of deadly force by a police officer or in self-defense refer to protection of the officer themselves or
others. We're talking about shooting the gun in the air as your example was.
For example, if the assailant had no control over the gun and was just shooting it in all directions, I think that there's a significant risk of death or bodily injury to anybody in the area. Again, after the officers announced that they were police officers and ordered Mr. Mitchell to stop, he raised his weapon. Once again, this time, Officer Vollen, his undisputed, was directly in the line of fire.
Did both officers get out of the car at the time?
Yes, they did, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Where was Officer Vollard? Was he on the passenger side?
Officer Vollen, before the second set of shots, was attempting to cover himself behind a car.
On a car behind the door of his squad?
Well, Officer Allen was sort of moving around to the back of the squad car, and Officer Vollen, I believe, was taking cover behind a parked car.
Was there a civilian witness to this? Is that?
There's a list of witnesses in the record who saw bits and pieces of different aspects of what occurred.
Except up to the point where Mitchell went down and nobody could see him except Officer Vollier. That's
right. This is a classic example of the reasonable use of deadly force. There is absolutely no evidence in the record that would cause a trier of fact to reject Officer Vollen's version of events.
There's no dispute as to any fact in this case.
There's no dispute as to any fact. There's no evidence presented at all. In fact,
what about inferences drawn? Are there any inferences where you could draw?
If Your Honor is referring to counsel's remarks regarding the physical evidence, there is no basis to make that sort of inference in this case. The record contains no evidence regarding the order in which these wounds were inflicted or the effect of these wounds on Mr. Mitchell. And this court has previously held in Plackus and to some extent also in Tom that this is not the sort of inference that the court is willing to draw based on forensic.
Well, there's no question that there was probable cause to make the stop. Obviously, he fit the identification. And there's no question in the record that he had a weapon drawn.
That's correct. That is undisputed. It's undisputed he was armed. It's undisputed he pointed it at the officer.
Is it undisputed that he had a weapon drawn when the last two shots were fired?
Yes, it is.
And in which hand was the weapon, if you know, according to the testimony? Is it
in
the hand where he had previously been shot, or was he shot the second time in the hand?
Well, Your Honor raises an important point, which is we don't know the order in which the wounds were inflicted.
The autopsy doesn't show you that.
It does not show the order. It shows where they were.
Yeah.
But, and certainly the plaintiff could have retained an expert to explore the forensic evidence and the physical evidence, but that was not done in this case.
And there was no inquest here. Isn't that the procedure, usually, or not?
I don't know the answer to that, but I don't believe anything was requested.
It is where I'm from.
Okay. It's possible. I just simply don't know. I would be happy to find out that for Your Honor, if you would like. Because Officer Vaughn's judgment was reasonable and his shooting was justified under the circumstances, there is no evidence undermining his account of events, the district court correctly entered summary judgment for the defendants. And I should point out, counsel remarked that the district court was under some additional obligation to review the record. Assuming that is even correct, the district court did, in fact, do that. There's a very clear statement in the district court's opinion that there is nothing in this record to undermine Officer Vaughn's testimony. So whatever careful scrutiny, and there's no doubt that he would be entitled to a careful scrutiny of the record, that was conducted in this case.
You don't believe there's a higher standard of summary judgment proof required for these types of cases, do you?
I don't believe there's a higher standard. I'm merely recognizing the language in the Plackett case, which indicates that in this type of case, summary judgment is certainly not precluded. However, the court will undertake a careful review of the record, and that review in this case will reveal nothing.
That's the only problem that I have, is the summary judgment.
Is that this is summary judgment. And even on summary judgment, the defendant must come forward with some evidence, and the plaintiff must then, the non-movement must come forward with more than mere speculation. The plaintiff must come forward with some sort of evidence, and he has not done so in this case. And for all these reasons and the reasons we state in our brief, we ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Does he have any time? Right.
One thing that we must consider, when we're talking about the wound to the hand where the gun is allegedly found, it doesn't matter whether that was done with the first two shots or the second two shots. The fact that it was done, I think, casts significant doubt on Officer Vola's credibility that this man was able to raise his gun up again. Or, even if it was the last shot that did that, why would he still have the gun in his hand as the officers have testified and is in the record? That belies the officer's credibility as far as that issue goes. The only other problem I have is I think the Flackus case does set a little higher standard here because, as they said very succinctly, usually there's no one else around to controvert what the shooting officer says. And in this case, the other witnesses either apparently were not in a position to see, and Officer Vollard's testimony we have to take at face value. And in that situation, I think there is a higher standard. And when the trial judge made the comment, nothing in the record, unfortunately, the autopsy results were not in the record, and he did not review those. And I think that it was...
Did you ask for them?
Your Honor, I was not the attorney of record
in
the trial.
Well, did the attorney of record ask for them?
No, apparently not, Your Honor. And neither party did, from what I can understand. There are no further questions. I thank the court.
Thank you, Tommy. Thank you both for your help. We will now proceed to case number 6.